This is Dialogue, a podcast series from American Mosaic. Just driving around the country, talking to people about roots, family, community, jobs, kids, whatever is on their mind today. I'm in Seattle, Washington, having a conversation with Laura. She's a professional in leading edge tech, and we talked about a variety of things. We talked about women in the workplace. We talked about leadership. We talked about values. And we touched a little bit on politics today. And we also talked about the role of technology now and in the future. Laura works in some interesting things in the area of artificial intelligence. Anyway, this is a part of the conversation. It was a great conversation, and one of those that I wish that we actually had more time to spend. It seems like that we've been given permission to say things that people were saying in private or they weren't saying. We're talking about, well, I mean, if you're a white supremacist, you're out talking. I mean, if the KKK is backing around and we're not afraid to say we hate Jews with our tiki torches or whatever. We're just doing some things that we might not have done while those same feelings in those people, it's not brand new. They were there. We're sort of giving permission for some things to...
This is a funny thing. This is a real funny thing. So, back where I grew up, right, that we as a culture in northern Michigan had a real fear of African-American people and Mexicans and anybody who was not white of European descent up here toiling away with all the rest of us, right, in the woods. And so there was a very, very clear and prevalent fear of other where I grew up. And that was a part of everyday speech. So much so, I mean, not so much in my household, exactly, like, my parents were like, you know, mind your speech, kid. But it was a part of the cultural environment, right, where I grew up. And without being judgy about it, the reality was that was our echo chamber. That was what we were comfortable with, was people like us. And I think that's a very normalized human behavior. We like to tribe up, right? And so the unfamiliar is really uncomfortable. And without getting into the big, important, and deeper conversation about how we treat folks and where the power structures are and institutional racism and all of that stuff, if we just go to the simple part about, you know, we in different regions of the United States have different belief systems and engage in different types of speech. And I think in the same way that when I say we, I'm specifically referring to folks out here in the blue bubble, in the same way that we're accused of being in some crazy left-wing echo chamber, folks elsewhere are accused of being in some crazy alt-right echo chamber, and maybe it's true, and in parts it really, really is. But I don't think that we have ever not actually been engaged in talking about people that are unfamiliar to us or that we don't agree with or don't look like us as other, right? As that other. They're not like us. They don't look like me. They don't talk like me. They don't believe like me. They didn't get educated in the same way as me. We have a natural or socialized willingness to kind of be suspect of different. And so I don't think that we all of a sudden went backward in how inclusive we choose to be with others, unless you're looking at it from are we hungry? Like, really, are we hungry? Not am I hungry. Is this region hungry? Which we are, right? We are. But are we hungry? Are we scared? Do we have good reason to be? And when we're hungry, and when we're scared, and when we're worried, and when we're worried for our kids, boy howdy, are we going to look at things that are unfamiliar and people who are unfamiliar as a threat? Because things are few, right? It's scarce. Like, there's not enough. And we are into that not enough. And when there's not enough, and we're hungry, and our kids are hungry, you better believe we're going to climb over piles of bodies to get them fed. And that's a part of being Homo sapien. That's a part of what us makes us us, right? It's innate in our animal body that we would shift there, right? So, of course, we're hearing more about, you know, folks who feel real strongly about purity of race or purity of religion or purity of things, purity of sameness. Because we're scared. And so if we're going to have a real conversation about having more inclusion of women, of people of color, people who are different than us, and just having better conversations with one another, first we have to look at the fundamental question of why are we so scared? What are we so scared of? And you know what? We have lots of reasons to be scared. 17 years of war, that's scary. Lots of economic decisions that have made us less self-sufficient as a country, that's left a lot of us without jobs or meaningful work. That's scary. The rotting of education institutions that aren't teaching our kids the things that they need to be able to go play in the technology NFL, or the actual NFL for that matter, right? Like, yeah, we're scared. And I think the most productive conversations that we could possibly have are, what are we afraid of? Why are we afraid of it? And rather than blaming others for it, taking responsibility for changing that, which is really important. And there are a lot of things that we need to change that are really important that I think that we can agree on. And the longer we focus on that smaller number of things. And there, I don't mean to belittle, like I said, I have dear family who are evangelical Christians back home in Michigan. You know, we have lots of differences of opinions. One of them is about how and when we have families, and what's okay about how families are created, and what families should look like. There's lots of disagreements we have on that. But the one thing that my stepbrothers and sisters and I all agree with is that kids should be well taken care of, and they should be safe, and they should be fed, and they should be healthy. And they should have opportunities. So if we agree about that, there's a lot we can get done.
Right. On the being afraid, it's interesting to me that this goes back to, young people, you know, maybe working in technology, but working in sort of new industries, being successful, whatever. There's an awful lot of people that would not have the conversation that we're having. They would not talk to me. They wouldn't express a view that was a little bit political or a little bit different. Because, and I got this from somebody, and it kind of opened my eyes a little bit, and I thought, well, that's interesting. Because they're kind of afraid. They're afraid that they don't want to, within their workplace, within their job, within their environment, they don't want to take a position over here or over here. Yeah. I mean, I don't want to be right. I don't want to be left. And what's the company line? Or, okay, this is kind of a safe place to operate in. And that kind of surprised me a little bit. But then I thought about it for a minute, and I go like, well, yes, of course that makes sense. Because some of these people, even though you would think that they're successful, they're actually afraid of losing their job.
Oh, yeah.
They're afraid of just what you said, that they're going to be obsolete next year.
Sure.
Or if they're not right on top of this. Or so there's this big fear factor.
Sure, yeah. I mean, if we take a step back and we look at how highly visible people have been losing their livelihoods lately. It's execution in the court of public opinion. And that doesn't just happen in the media, right? And this is not my having a commentary about the Me Too movement or any of that. I have my own opinions about that as a female professional in technology. I have stories I could tell, right? But we worry about that, right? Because there's we have bills to pay, kids to feed, retirements to consider. There's a lot on the line. The stakes are high. And even now, you know, I'm speaking on something that could be broadcast across the internet or will be broadcast across the internet. And at some point, anything that I say here and now could be brought back to take my livelihood from me. And so it's an incredible act of courage to hold a position that you may be held accountable for 10 years from now and have your job taken away, like the director who got fired by Disney for something that he tweeted 10 years ago that was a little more colorful than Disney would have preferred, right? That somebody else who had a very strong opinion to the contrary drug out to get him in trouble, right? So now is a time that to have a belief and to take a position and to say, hey, you know, this is what I believe is true, does put you at risk. And so it's an act of courage to do that and to try and do that in a voice that is as central, like centrist as possible, because I have a great deal of respect for folks in my country who are different than me, who believe different things than me. But one of the things I love about the core values of America is this notion of freedom, that I can have the religion that is important to me, and you can have the religion that's important to you. In that if you believe that families should look a certain way, then you can make your family in that image. And if you believe in certain things about the sacredness of life, then you can live your life that way. Absolutely. And nobody's going to make you not. Now, we're reaching a place where we're starting to push the idea that there's one unified ideal about how that should look and that nobody else should be able to do anything different. And that's not okay. Like, I'm not cool with that. But I respect the fact that my family can make different decisions than me. My neighbors can make different decisions than me. And they can structure their lives how they wish. And that, to me, is freedom. That's the definition of freedom to me, is that we can live as safely as possible, as civilly as possible, be different from one another, and still come together and get work done that produces a healthy water, healthy air, healthy soil to grow things in, healthy kids, healthy country.
Talk to me a little bit about a woman in the workplace.
Oh, wow. So much I could say that could upset people here. It's... Now is a very interesting time, and I feel very fortunate to be living in Seattle on the west coast of the United States, in a place that by and large views me and my capability as more or less equal, right? It doesn't mean that I haven't had to work hard for recognition and promotion and that kind of stuff, and I've definitely run into situations where had I been male, the choices may have been different around me. And I have experienced things that you would not be okay if they happened to your wife or sister. I think back home they called it a blanket party for that guy who did that thing to your sister that you thought was totally not okay at the bonfire last Friday. I've had a few situations that could have brought on a blanket party back home, right? And I think that's when we talk about women at work and the equality of women. I think it's a sense of compassionate equals, right? That we're as capable as anyone else, and that in terms of how we're treated by other women or by men in power, that. If we wouldn't want it happening to our wives, and we wouldn't want it happening to our sisters, and we wouldn't want it happening to our daughters, and we wouldn't want our sons to be doing it, we wouldn't want our husbands to be doing it, we wouldn't want our fathers to be doing it, because it doesn't represent the better nature of how we should be treating each other as a caring group of people, then it shouldn't happen. And for me, you know, there's a brand of feminism that says, we should take the power back. And not only should we take the power back, we should punish them for ever having done stuff to us. That's so not where I come from. To me, it's anybody who's getting bullied and beaten down and harassed and treated in ways that aren't conscionable by the average person, that should stop. And if it happens to anybody, I don't care if you're a guy, I don't care if you're female, I don't care why, if it's happening in the workplace, it's not okay. And yes, there are specific forms of abuse that can emerge, like that can just happen between people of the opposite sex, and, you know, and for a whole lot of reasons, reasons where a person's seen as other, and there's other with power over, and there's a sense of scarcity, we can engage in some pretty yucky behaviors. So when you talk about women in the workplace, to me it's not necessarily a conversation about justice, although it is. To me it's a conversation about decency, about respect, and that should be common amongst us if we're going to get together in teams and try and make something happen.
Good. You know, that makes me, it makes me think of values, which we touched on earlier. Values, our morals today, you know, I've had conversations with some people that tend to, in the good Christian values, supposedly, but anyway, I remember having a little conversation about our moral values today, regardless of whether you're left or right or, you know, your politics or whatever. And I was just saying that, you know, I'm a little concerned about kind of some things. I mean, it's not like what I grew up with and some things, and I'm hearing things and actions and what people are saying. And it concerns me a little bit. It concerns me, you know, about my grandkids. And I think there's something that I don't care what church you belong to. There's just certain values. There's certain things that seem like we're a little out of whack today on some things. And that's kind of coming, some of what you were talking about, that's coming from the top. And it's, you know, I'm not saying it's female or male or whatever. It's just dismissing people, like not treating people well.
Well, so
we're kind of in an odd place with that right now. And that's got nothing to do with technology. It's got nothing to do with a whole bunch of stuff. It's got a lot to do with just human beings.
Does it? You know, I question it only in this, is that anybody who has ever worked for a living and had bosses and or had leaders that they followed of any kind, whether that was a religious leader or a boss leader or any kind of leader that you follow, is that those people who other people follow create culture, whether it's in an office or in a church or in a country or in a state. And so we have to ask ourselves, who do we follow and why do we follow them? Because the power that leaders have is power that's given to them by the people who follow them. And so as a person who operates as a leader in a corporate environment, I have to ask for people to follow me. And when people follow me, when they choose that, which they have to choose that, because they can be assigned to work on stuff with me, but that doesn't mean that they're helping, because you know you've done it. You know you've been assigned to somebody that you hate, but you can't say anything, and so you're going to sandbag that and kind of what's that? And just sort of, you know, like everybody knows what it is to be in the culture of a leader that does not represent them and that makes a toxic situation to get work done, to get life done, to get faith done. And so I think the question is not, what's wrong with us as humanity that there are people like this saying things like this and doing things like this? I think the real question is why do we respect that and why do we follow it? And that's an individual question. It's not a we question. Why do we respect it and why do we follow it? And does that represent us? Or what benefit do we get by following it? Right? What's the advantage that we get by following it?
Yeah, very personal.
It's a very personal thing.
It's very personal.
And so, like, again, going back home, right? That's Michigan flipped to a red state. My parents voted for Trump. Both sets of parents voted for Trump. My brothers and sisters voted for Trump. And they are, to varying degrees, very happy with the results that they're getting for that leadership choice. And so that's cool, right? I mean, insofar as that's true for them, great, right? And I embrace the fact that that's true for them, and we have conversations about it. But what's interesting is when we start talking about faith and we start talking about Jesus and Jesus' teachings, because I may be Buddhist now, but I was raised in a Christian household and raised in a very Christian state, and so that those values are a part of me culturally and personally. And so when we change the direction of the conversation to a faith-based conversation, and we ask ourselves, why would we follow Jesus as a leader? What were the values that Jesus had that caused us to gravitate to him? And in the parlance of the Christian faithful is, why do you let Jesus into your heart? What is the intention that when you ask for that and when you ask for that relationship, what are you bringing into your life by having that relationship with God? And if I remember what I was taught and share what I believe, then that's about compassion. It's about helping the sick. It's about feeding the hungry. It's about not judging where it's not your place to judge. Ultimately, it's about compassion and forgiveness. So we should ask if we would like our leaders, all the leaders we follow, from the leaders in our churches to the leaders in our governments, do we want them to reflect those kinds of values for us or not? And is the benefit that we are getting from our leadership choices in our companies, in our churches, in our countries, in our states, in our cities, are they reflecting the values that we have? And if they are right now for you, great. I mean, maybe the aggregate concept, like the total consequence of that, is maybe not great in the long term. Maybe you are getting what you want or what you need or what you think other people deserve. But I would say that you can't wage war forever, and you can't hate your neighbor forever. And you can't let other people go sick without getting sick yourself. So, side story, right? When I went to Japan, I was in Japan on the 60th anniversary of the bombing of Nagasaki and Hiroshima. And I was there for the wedding of one of my college friends and his Japanese wife. And I was sitting at the dinner table, sitting on the floor at a low table, in the family home of the bride with her 96-year-old sorry, I'm going to stop because I...
Yeah.
So, was in Japan for a wedding, and it was my college friend's wedding, and we were in the family home of the bride, Japanese woman and her family. And her 96, 97-year-old grandfather was at the head of the table. Oji-san, great guy, very sweet, didn't speak a Board of English, and so Miharu did all of the translation. And it was the 60th anniversary of the bombing of Nagasaki and Hiroshima. And Oju-san decided to tell the story of what it was like to be a soldier in the war when America bombed their country. We evaporated two full cities of human beings. Evaporated them.
Yeah.
In response to them having attacked a military base in Hawaii. I have never felt more humble in my entire life and more unworthy to sit at a person's dinner table and eat their food than to understand that my country, before I was born, evaporated two full cities of people, and yet I was welcome to sit at this dinner table and eat their food. And when I asked Oju-san how in the world he could let my friend marry his granddaughter, an American marry his granddaughter, and let these Americans come sit at his table after we did that to them, even 60 years later. And he said, anger is poison. An absence of forgiveness is poison. And it's not just poison for your enemy, it's poison for you. And it's a poison that will poison you for generations if you let it. And so we Japanese had to decide to forgive you for what you did so that we could live. In the wake of September 11th, where we lost a few thousand people, right? A little over 3,000 people, right? It was 2,600, forgive me, New York, for not having your exact number. And 17 years of war, and hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of lives, America hasn't forgiven anything. And if you want to know, like, if you question how it is that we got here, that we're so afraid, it's because we haven't been able to forgive. And we are unforgiven in the world. So why do we need to be so scared? Because we need to find forgiveness, and we need to forgive each other. We need to talk to one another, and then we need to start forgiving ourselves and forgiving others. Because it's poison for our enemies, and most of all, it's poison for us.
Yep. Yep. That's a good place to... Well, we have a lot of work to do as a society.
The upside is there are a lot of us.
We've got a lot of actually, as you said, as soon as you sit down and start talking to people, you've got amazing.
Oh my God!
Amazing people. You know, we all know about the same stuff. We all care.
That's it for this episode of Dialogue from an American Mosaic.
I hope you enjoy this podcast series, and please subscribe and tell your friends.
Maybe you have something to share with us on American Mosaic.